If you have a Bible, you can grab it now and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. If you want to use one of those black Bibles that are kind of floating around in the chairs, you can grab that and turn to page 588. 588. Here at our church, we preach through whole books of the Bible. We don't just kind of jump around based upon what mood I'm in or what kind of things I want to talk about. We preach through whole books, and so we've been going through Ecclesiastes, which has been a really unique book written by a guy named Solomon, who was a king, a really rich king. He's an old man now, and so he's gained all kinds of life experience, gone through the ringer in some ways, and so we're going to learn from Solomon's experience this morning in Ecclesiastes 7. Now that most of you are older, don't take that the wrong way, but now that most of you are older and out of childhood, I'll say, have you ever looked back and realized that there's a lot of things that you thought existed when you were a kid that actually don't exist in this world? Or lots of situations that you thought you were going to step into that just aren't there? Like when I was a kid, I really thought that most of my life was going to involve farm animals. Because of all the songs we sang, all of the books you read, right? Like, we have a one-year-old daughter right now, and she knows the sound that every single farm animal makes. She thinks that the whole point of existence is to tell bigger people what sound a sheep makes. That's just what she thinks, all right? She's going to be so disappointed at how few sheep are actually in her life. They're just not there very often. I think I've seen 2 sheep in my life, yeah? Or maybe, like, quicksand. Didn't you think as a kid that most of your life was going to be spent avoiding quicksand? Because it's in like every show you watch. Every time there's a show on that's a series, the main character somehow gets into quicksand or his dog or something. And I just thought most of my life was going to involve avoiding quicksand in this world. Anybody seen quicksand here? None of you. Yeah, right? Or like a skeleton key. You remember that? Like when you're a kid and you watch these different shows, didn't you think that there was this skeleton key that if you got it, if you could get your hands on it, that it would open any lock of any door in the world? I thought that existed like way further into life than I'd like to admit to you. Like I think I was like in high school and I realized it's not out there. Like I didn't think there was just one, but I thought like maybe it's just hard to get or really expensive, but you could buy a special key that opened any door. And so I was talking to my friends, I think it was my junior year of high school, and I was like, man, wouldn't it be great to have a skeleton key? And they were like, yeah, it'd be great if they existed. And I was like, yeah, wouldn't it? Maybe you think that that does really exist, though. I bet we do. I bet a lot of us think that skeleton keys do really exist, but not for doors, but for life. I bet that most of us kind of feel like and think that there's some skeleton keys out there that just can open life up and make it enjoyable and good and filled with fulfillment. Like there's this skeleton key that if we could just discover it or obtain it, then we could definitely have a good life, right? Maybe you think the skeleton key to life is having enough money. If you just had enough of it, that's your skeleton key, and life would be great. It opens every door. Or having a big family. That's your skeleton key. If I can just have this big old table that seats 12 people and fill it up with a whole big family, then life would just be so fulfilling. Or maybe it's like totally opposite of those two. Maybe the skeleton key for you is not having any attachments, right? No attachments. You're the kind of person that somebody walks up to and says, hey, what are you doing Friday? Do you have plans Friday? And your answer to that is, it all depends on what you're about to say, right? You're not going to trick me into anything because you don't want to be attached, right? You're a true millennial. There's probably some skeleton key out there that each of us feel like if we had, then we could have a happy, good life. Well, Solomon spent his whole life looking for skeleton keys to life. He spent his whole life pursuing things that he thought would bring fulfillment, satisfaction, and joy. He was looking for the skeleton key. And he gives us some of his conclusions in Ecclesiastes 7. That's what we're going to see today. Like, look at verse 1. Solomon says this in verse 1. He says, a good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, since that's the end of all mankind. And the living should take it to heart. Grief is better than laughter. For when a face is sad, a heart may be glad. The heart of a wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. So guys, we're going to see several things in this chapter that we all think could be the skeleton key to life, but Solomon's going to tell us that they're not. We're actually going to see eight things, all right? And here's the first one I think we're seeing. Solomon says that we think a lot of times that the skeleton key to life is good vibes. Man, give me those good vibes. I don't want any of your negativity up in my space. I want my whole life just to be about good vibes, right? Solomon tried that. He tried celebrating birth, partying, laughter, pleasure. That's filled in these verses here. This is a guy who was throwing parties for 20,000 of his closest friends every single night, feeding them all. This guy went hard after good vibes. And maybe you think that's exactly the key to the good life, right? Man, just give me those good vibes. I don't want anything negative in my life. You don't want to hear about the brokenness in the world and the daily problems of your friends. If you were to sit down and watch a Netflix documentary, you're not watching Blackfish and what are the ones that are super depressing? You're not watching the depressing ones. You want an uplifting one, right? I haven't watched many of those depressing ones. This is like me. Give me the good vibes, right? But Solomon says it's better to go to the house of mourning than the house of partying. It's better to spend your evenings mourning, contemplating death. Because, he says, when a face is sad, then a heart may be glad. See, Solomon isn't just emo. In fact, we've seen all throughout Ecclesiastes so far that the bro is all about joy. He's all about enjoying the good gifts of God. Solomon loves joy. It's just that Solomon knows that there's a certain kind of deep joy that only comes through the difficulties of this life. Solomon knows that there's a certain kind of joy and gladness that only comes through adversity and mourning. And so to live a life that's only about good vibes is to miss out on a depth of joy that God wants us to experience. Guys, the skeleton key to a good life isn't good vibes. In fact, if your whole life is only about good vibes and staying away from anything that could be negative, you're actually missing out on a depth of joy that God wants to bring into your life through adversity. I think we fall into pursuing this skeleton key by just avoiding anything negative, right? We avoid confrontation, sweep things under the rug in our families instead of dealing with them, right? Because that's so much easier. Let's just not talk about it. Let's just forget about it. Let's just not make a big deal about it. Let's keep the good vibes because life will be better that way. A lot of us would rather move to a new city and just start over or switch jobs or switch churches than fight to restore brokenness in relationships. But Solomon says, this key doesn't work. God wants to move us to a fuller joy and gladness through some mourning and difficulty. So, the skeleton key to life is not good vibes, guys. Look at verse 5. It says, it's better to listen to rebuke from a wise person than to listen to the song of fools. For like the cackling of burning thorns under the pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This too is empty. So here, I think a lot of us may think that the skeleton key to a good life is affirmation. Affirmation. Because no one likes to be rebuked, right? To have someone tell you that what you're doing is wrong. We'd rather have people in our life that are just constantly affirming us, telling us that our ideas and our pursuits are awesome, epic, and amazing. We want to be like that old Starbucks commercial from the early 2000s where, I can't remember the band now, but there was a band that followed around this guy. He woke up and he was in bed, and I think his name was Tom. I can't remember. It was the Eye of the Tiger song, right? Who sings Eye of the Tiger, Charlie? You don't know? Like, anybody know? Survivor? All right, so I guess it was them, or a Survivor cover band. That, like, this guy woke up and they were like, Roy, 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 Roy. And they, like, followed him throughout his day and they said the things he did and they were, like, pumping him up and he was getting so excited. And then they found another guy and they went on to him. Like, we think if we can surround ourselves with people who just pump us up and affirm us and just speak good, affirming things into us, that's the key to life. Man, that's the kind of people I need in my life. I need a new friend group, right? Solomon says, that's like listening to the song of fools. I saw a quote this week that said this: if you're the kind of person that squashes something when someone else gets excited about it, then you're the worst kind of person in the world. See, guys, in the world's eyes, the worst kind of person is someone who isn't affirming of every idea, thought, or new way. Solomon says, that's foolish. The key to life isn't surrounding yourself with people who will only affirm you. You should have people in your life who will tell you when you're acting like an idiot. You should have people in your life. Let me just ask you this question for some little reflection. Do you have people in your life who will call you out when they see that you're not loving your spouse well? Do you have people in your life who will be honest with you and tell you when you're not parenting your kids well? Do you have people in your life who will be honest with you and tell you, they'll be open with you about how if you're in a dating relationship and you aren't following God's path for that relationship? Do you have people in your life who will tell you when you're falling too in love with money and buying stuff? Or do you only have people in your life who are affirming in all that you do? Guys, Solomon says that the skeleton key to a good life isn't affirmation. That's actually foolishness. Check out verse 7. It says, surely the practice of extortion turns a wise person into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the mind. The end of a matter is better than its beginning. A patient spirit is better than a proud spirit. Don't let your spirit rush to be angry, for anger abides in the heart of fools. I'm sure Solomon hoped that this skeleton key would unlock the good life. I think it's this: having everything right now. I think we probably all struggle with this one. We just think if we had the things we want in life right now, that's the skeleton key to life, right? Because Solomon here, he's talking about, he's promoting patience and waiting till the end and not rushing. He sees someone practicing extortion, forcing something to happen that wouldn't happen naturally right now. And then he sees someone getting angry, impatience leading to anger because they don't have what they feel like they should. Man, this is me. This is me. Most of you know that my family just moved into a different house, and there are so many things to take care of in this old house, and I just want everything to be done. I just told Hee Jung the other night, I said, I just want that final thing in the house to be done and just to sit down and know that it's completed, it's done. And I want it to happen like every night. Every night, once Kayla goes to bed and everything's, I'm like, okay, what can we do now? How many pictures can we hang? How many things can we do? Let's do it. And so I got into this thing the other night where I was like, I'm hanging all of our pictures in our house, all of them, tonight. Of the like 38 that we have, we got two up. And I was so angry. Because I just feel like if I could have it done right now, that would be the key to my happiness. Maybe you want financial security right now. You're sick of living paycheck to paycheck, and you feel like if God could just give you financial security right now, that then you'd finally be happy and content and fulfilled in life. Or you want a job that's completely fulfilling. You're sick of doing these jobs in life that you don't really care about, that you're not stoked about. And if God could just give you that one job that you're stoked about and feel fulfilled in, life would finally be good. Maybe you're getting impatient about God providing you a spouse or a child. And you just feel like if you could have those things right now, that's the key. Solomon contrasts a patient spirit with what he calls a proud spirit. Because someone who thinks that they need everything right now, Solomon says, is someone who believes that they know better in life than God does. Someone who looks at their life and says, I know that I need this right now to be happy and content. And what they're saying is, I know better than God about how my life should go. He's saying that having everything right now isn't the skeleton key to our happiness. Look at verse 10. Solomon says, don't say, why were the former days better than these? Since it's not wise for you to ask this. Wisdom is as good as an inheritance, as an advantage to those who see the sun, because wisdom is protection as silver is protection. But the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of its owner. Consider the work of God, for who can straighten out what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, but in the day of adversity, consider God has made the one as well as the other, so that no one can discover anything that will come after him. Here's the skeleton key I think Solomon's exposing here. Our feeling that the key to life has actually passed us by. I think it's the skeleton key that the key to life is back in the good old days. The key to life is back in the good old days. Maybe you feel like the key to your happiness has already passed you, right? It was back in high school, back when you were in shape, back when you were dunking on people. Anybody dunking in here on people? No? Back when you were in better shape, back when you were thinner, back before you had attachments, back before kids, back before debt, back before that really bad decision. Solomon says here in this section that God has us on a journey. Sometimes he has us on this straight path that feels great and full of blessing and joy, and sometimes the path is really, really crooked. And if you're in that crooked time right now, can you straighten it out? Solomon asks. Both paths come from God. He is completely in control of your life, where you were, where you are right now, and where you're going. And here's the reality, guys. The good old days of our life are not behind us. If you're a follower of Jesus, the good days are ahead of us, is what God says. It's not that we, for the key to life, it's not that we need to recover something that's in the past. It's that we need to trust what God has said about our present and our future. That Jesus has said he's coming again, and when he comes, we will be transformed to be like him in glory. It's that Jesus said that we can be with him right now and content and satisfied and have pleasures forevermore in this life now. Solomon says, press forward, trusting that the key to life doesn't lie in recovering a part of your past. The key to life is in trusting Jesus right now with your future. So the skeleton key to life isn't the good old days, guys. Look at verse 15. He says, in my futile life, I've seen everything. Someone righteous perishes in spite of his righteousness, and someone wicked lives long in spite of his evil. Don't be excessively righteous and don't be overly wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Here's what Solomon's exposing here. The key to life is not karma. The key to life is not karma. I think a lot of us think it is. I really think we do. We'd never call it that because karma is like a Hindu and Buddhist type of teaching, but I think that most Christians basically operatively, by that I mean the way we live our lives, not the things we say, but the way we live our lives, we operatively live as if karma is the key to life, right? The idea that if I just do good and am good, if I bless my neighbor, if I serve my community, if I go to church, if I give to God, serve my church, if I do all these good things, then really what should happen is that God should give me a good, easy life. And if I do bad and wicked things, what I should expect is that my life is really hard and should be full of trials and difficulty. I think a lot of us operatively feel like that's the key to life. Just be good and good things will happen. Solomon says, no, man, I've seen it in this life. I've seen a righteous person die in their righteousness and a wicked person live a long life. Karma doesn't work. It's not a thing. So he says, don't be overly righteous. This isn't Solomon saying it's okay not to be good or do the right thing. It's Solomon saying if you're trusting in your rightness, using it to get angry at God for the things that aren't going your way, then you're destroying yourself. Don't trust so much in your rightness. Don't be overly righteous so much that you think because I'm being good and right in this world that God owes me something. That's the key to blessings and goodness in this life. Solomon says it's not. You could die in your goodness today, and someone who's living wickedly could have a great life in this world and live for a long time. Maybe you've been feeling that way recently, that you've been following God, going to church, giving, serving, and still things just aren't turning around in life. You're starting to feel like God doesn't love you, isn't working for you, so what's the point? What's the point of doing all these good things for God? Solomon's saying, man, that's not the key to the good life anyway. To try to work and do good and put God in your debt, that's not the key. In the same way, the opposite is not the key, all right? Look at verse 17. He says, don't be excessively wicked and don't be foolish. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you grasp onto one and not let the other slip from your hand, for the one who fears God will end up with both of them. Solomon says, don't be excessively wicked. But here's what I think some of us see as possibly the key to a good life. Hedonism, right? Just hedonism. Doing whatever we feel like whenever we feel like it, right? Doesn't that feel like the key to the good life? The key to happiness, the key to joy? Man, if I could just get into a situation, if I could retire with a lot of money, finally get, you know, the final home, the dream home, if I could get all my kids out of the house, if I could get into this spot where I can just do whatever I want, whenever I want to, man, that would be the good life. No one pressuring me, no one telling me what to do. I'm not going to let some old ancient book tell me how to morally structure my life. I'm just going to do whatever I want to do whenever I want to do it. That's hedonism, guys. The complete pursuit of pleasure and self-indulgence. And for most people in the world, that sounds like the key to the good life. Most people are working to get to this place. Maybe you've been feeling like that lately. Like if you could just let your hair down a bit, not be up so uptight about following Jesus and his way, and just live your life and do what's right in your own eyes, you'd be so much happier. When Solomon was writing the Proverbs, he wrote this. Just listen, Proverbs 14:12 says this. He says, there's a way that seems right to a person, but the end of that way is death. There's a way that seems right to all of us. I think this way of self-indulgence, just kind of naturally in our brokenness and sin, in our sinful condition that we're all in, I think that just kind of naturally feels right. A good life would be to indulge myself in whatever I want to, whenever I want to. Solomon says, there's a way that seems right to all of us to live this life and be happy. The end of that is death. See, guys, hedonism isn't the skeleton key to the good life. We need somebody to show us the way to life, joy, and contentment, because on our own, we're going to run hard after death. There's another key Solomon pursued in verse 19. He says, wisdom makes the wise person stronger than 10 rulers of a city. There's certainly no one righteous on the earth who does good and never sins. Don't pay attention to everything people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you, for in your heart you know that many times you yourself have cursed others. Now, these seem like three totally disjointed proverbs that don't really connect, but I think they do. Here's what I think Solomon's saying. In verse 19, he's talking about power, right? If you could just get the wisdom to be more powerful than 10 rulers of a city, if you could just get power, right? And then in verse 20, he's talking about perfection. Maybe you think, like, if I could just be perfect morally, have this perfect persona, have this perfect perception, and he says, no, that's not it. And then in verse 21, he's talking about how people look at you, what they say about you. Power, perfection, perception. Here's what I think Solomon's saying here. The key to a good life, the skeleton key to a good life, is not your reputation. It's not your reputation. We think that if we just got enough power, right, or had a perfect life, or if everyone could just talk well enough about us, that that would be the key, to have a good reputation. Solomon exposes that even your good reputation isn't the key to life, because in verse 20 he says this, you yourself are still sinful. No matter what others think about you, no matter how others perceive you, you know the depth of darkness in your own heart. You can't gloss over that. We can trick everyone else around us into perceiving us and looking at us a certain way. We can work hard to get power. We can work hard to be impressive. But we all know the depth of our own hearts. And we know we're still broken. Maybe you've thought the key to life is just keeping your life in order, giving the appearance that you've got it all figured out. As long as your reputation is intact with everyone else around you, that's all you need, even if you know that everything inside is a mess. Solomon says, no, it's not going to work. That's not the key to the good life. Solomon pursued one more key in verse 23. Look what he said. He said, I've tested all this by wisdom, and I've resolved, I will be wise, but it was beyond me. What exists is beyond reach and very deep. Who can discover it? I turn my thoughts to know, explore, and examine wisdom and an explanation for things, and to know that wickedness is stupidity and that folly is madness. And I find more bitter than death the woman who is a trap, her heart a net and her hands chains. The one who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner will be captured by her. Look, says the teacher, I've discovered this by adding one thing to another to find out the explanation, which my soul continually searches for but does not find. I found one person in 1,000, but none of those was a woman. Solomon searched hard, but he struck out finding the skeleton key to life in relationships. The skeleton key to life is not relationships, guys. We know that Solomon had at least 1,000 sexual partners, and he went hard after pursuing a connection, a relationship that would bring him satisfaction and fulfillment. He says, nope, emptiness. It's all emptiness there. Solomon would have been the tender champion if it existed in his time. You'd think at least one of those women would have unlocked true joy and contentment for Solomon, right? It didn't happen. He did find one guy in 1,000 guys who was wise. But even still, back in verse 20, Solomon says every person is sinful, so even that one guy was going to let him down. Solomon says, man, the skeleton key to life does not come in relationships. Maybe you think it does. Maybe you think that if you could just find the right spouse, or maybe you think, man, if I just had a different spouse, you could finally be happy. Maybe you think if you had a different friend group, a different community, a different country, whatever, that you'd be happy because you'd have different relationships. But Solomon says the key to life doesn't come through relationships. They were never intended by God to give us ultimate joy and satisfaction and fulfillment. And so maybe a next step for some of us this morning is to stop placing that pressure on our spouse. To stop looking at our spouse and say, my life's contentment, joy, and fulfillment depends on you and how you treat me. Or on our friends. Or on our kids. Or on our parents. Guys, Solomon says the key to our joy, contentment, and fulfillment in life is not in an earthly relationship. God never intended for it to do what we sometimes expect it to do. So Solomon concludes it all in verse 29. He says, only see this. I've discovered that God made people upright, but they pursued many schemes. Solomon says, I see that God made people upright. God gave us the key to the good life, the real good life. He made us upright, but we rebelled. We pursued many other schemes, many other keys that we thought would fulfill us and satisfy us more than the way God created us. I mean, that's the whole story of Genesis 1 through 3, right? God created man upright, and what did man in Genesis 3 pursue? Other schemes. And now we're all in that, all of us here. God has called us to be upright, to have a joyful, content, fulfilling life. And what are we in the cycle of? Pursuing many other keys to life. We need God to give us a better key to the good life than we could ever find on our own. Because old man Solomon says, I've tried them all, and they're all vanity. And guys, that's exactly what the gospel is. It's exactly what the gospel is. It really is the key to the good life now and forever. The gospel is this, that Jesus, who was fully God and fully man, was born into this broken world, and he lived, get this, he lived the perfect life. A lot of times we talk about the birth, the death, the resurrection, the ascension of Jesus. Guys, he lived the perfect life. That is crucial. Without it, the gospel doesn't make sense. Jesus lived a life that was fully pleasing to God in his humanity. He never sinned. He lived a life, in Jesus' life, it wasn't a life that was just full of only good vibes and affirmation. Read the Gospels. There weren't a ton of good vibes and affirmation for Jesus. The things that we think would be key to the good life, right? Jesus didn't experience them. Jesus' life wasn't a life of having everything he wanted right now. He endured the cross, suffering the shame. Jesus' life was not a life of karma because he definitely didn't get treated the way he deserved. It wasn't a life filled with fulfilling relationships. All of his friends abandoned him in his time of need. But it was a life that was fully pleasing to God. And here's the beautiful thing, guys. Jesus laid down that pleasing life when he died for you. And because he lived that kind of life, God can now credit Jesus' life to us. A follower of Jesus is someone whose actual life is sinful, broken, and a complete mess. But because of what happened in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, God gives the perfect life of Jesus to the follower of Jesus. That's the gospel. And that's the key to the good life. That you, today, you and I, can have the life of Jesus credited to us. That when God looks at you, he won't see the brokenness, the sin, the rebellion. He sees Jesus. That's amazing, guys. The key to the good life is not that we achieve it on our own, but that God achieved the good life for us. He lived it. He did it. And now, look at what Colossians 3 says. Here's what Colossians 3 says. For you died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, you will also appear with him in glory. Guys, the key to the good life is not self-actualization, self-fulfillment, living out our dreams, chasing our stars, reaching for the moon but landing among the stars, living our best life now. It's none of that junk. The key to the good life is that you and I need to die. We need to die to our pursuit of the good life on our own. And when we die to thinking that we can find joy, fulfillment, and satisfaction in this life on our own, when we die to that and give our lives to the one who purchased it for us, Jesus, then we found the skeleton key to the good life. When that happens, our life becomes so married with Jesus that it says your life is hidden with Christ in God. We are totally united to him. And when he comes again, which he promised to do, we'll be with him forever, and it will be in glory. It will be glorious. Guys, that's the good life that we will live forever. Glory with God. But you can have it right now, too. Listen to what Psalm 16 says, like the verse of our church. It says this. The psalmist talking to God, he says, God, you reveal the path of life to me. In your presence, he says, with you, God, there is abundant joy. At your right hand are eternal pleasures. Guys, if your life is hidden with Christ in God, you are in that place. You can be in that place. At God's right hand, because that's where Jesus is. Abundant joy, pleasures forever. You can have the good life now. It may look like Jesus's. It may not be full of good vibes, karma, and fulfilling relationships, but you will be hidden with Christ in God. You'll be in a place where you can have more joy, satisfaction, contentment, in this life than you could ever have apart from Jesus. That's the key to the good life. There's a place at the bottom of your info card where it says, my next step today is, and then there's a space for you to fill that out. There's a bunch of pens in the back if you want to get up at any time and grab one. If you want to fill that out with some way that God has spoken to you through Ecclesiastes 7 today, if you say, yes, I know really clearly that I've been pursuing this in my life as the key. I've been banking it all, betting it all, putting all the chips in on karma, putting all the chips in on good vibes, and I see now that that's going to be empty. If you know clearly that there's some sort of next step that God wants you to take, you can fill that out, turn it in this box, and the leaders of our church will pray for you this week. We'll pray that God would give you the grace to actually not just be a hearer of his word, but be a doer also, and to take steps actively in your life to trust him and to live out pursuing Jesus only as your key to the good life. So let's go ahead and pray and ask God to do a work in each of our hearts and minds through his word this morning.